This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Alexa, will Aston Villa get promoted?
I don't know that one.
Alexa, who is Tony Jarre?
Tatcha Cornurum, formerly Parnom Yerum, better known internationally as Tony Jarre and in Thailand as Jarre Parnom, is a Thai martial artist, actor, action choreographer, stuntman, director, and Buddhist monk.
Alexa, is Steve Bruce a lizard?
No, Steve Bruce is not a lizard.
Alexa, what is Steve Bruce?
Stephen Roger Steve Bruce is an English professional football manager and former player who is currently manager of Aston Villa.
Alexa, why haven't they sacked Steve Bruce?
Sorry, I'm not sure.
Alexa, play My Old Man Said.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Back, the great delivery, and there is the third. It's Keenan Davis who scored it, just 19 years of age, and it's his first ever senior goal for Aston Villa.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast show. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. And joining me, Dan Rogers from thevillaunderground.com.
Tis I, it is Dan from the Villa Underground. And
how did that evolve? Why don't people call you Danny or Daniel?
I don't know. I am who I am. I am the Villa Underground. I wave sausages at people online. These things evolve.
You've got no idea, have you?
I have no idea.
Because I've always been a David rather than a Dave.
You've always been in trouble.
I just think David sounds more sexy than Dave. Dave.
It's a bit like, is he the robot on, is it Alien and Predator?
It is. HAL, 2001.
David.
The Kubrick film.
Yes.
Yes, David.
You will support Aston Villa for the rest of your days, David.
I wouldn't do that if I was you, David.
I wouldn't renew that season ticket, David.
Open the pod bay doors, HAL.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Anyway, what's been happening?
We won a game! We won a game! 3 goals away from home!
But no, I just meant in life in general, because we like to segue into this Villa nonsense by trying to talk about something else. Earlier on in the week, I went to the Football Supporters Federation EFL clubs.
Oh, you've been relegated.
Meeting. Back in the day, I used to go, fellow Premier League club supporter reps. We all had the same kind of issues and problems. Now it's a bit of a spectrum of issues, which kind of is interesting from the point of view. For example, ticket prices, Championship clubs, bigger ones are still trying to, operate a little bit like Premier League clubs, and you want that kind of 20s plenty and that kind of stuff. While back lower down in the leagues, maybe their tickets aren't even £20. And obviously the ticket price
28 plenty from their point of view.
Yeah, they'd rather have them increase because obviously tickets, the revenue is more important. So there's a much broader range of needs there. So that was kind of interesting. The Barnsley fan rep, I think it's the Barnsley Supporters Trust rep, actually made a point of coming up to me after the meeting, and he wanted me to pass on thanks to the Villa away fans. He said they were magnificent in terms of volume and getting the party started.
That's right.
Because he actually goes, I think, every Barnsley home game, he actually does go on the away concourse.
All right.
And I said, you obviously saw the guys climbing on the roof pipes and everything. And he said, yeah. He said, but my main issue with it was, he said, you have to take the disabled home fans through the away end or the away concourse. So that was his only gripe. He said it was just a bit. He said it was a bit of a pain just getting them through. But he said, do thank the fans, because it was. It was dead good.
It was right good.
Top class, right good. 3 points. And Villa managed to get 3 points at the weekend.
Good 3 points, I thought.
Those mystical 3 away points as well, which only happened 4 times last season. So we're a quarter of the way through
our season. Oh, we will not know a high like this again. I thought we played really well overall.
When you looked at the September calendar, I mean, a bit of pressure on Bruce already in August, and you looked at the Barnsley game, and I mean, they had a massive, I think 19 players or something left. I mean, I don't know what kind of level of players, you know, if that includes youth players, etc. But you have this down for a win, and then our games at the end of September against Burton, Bolton, you would hope we'd also win. So, yeah. Bruce, as we've always said, would be still the Villa boss come the next international break. Number two, should it have been number one? Well, we're not that obsessed, but Harry Redknapp sacked...
Oh, sorry.
was he sacked before the final whistle? It seemed to be very quickly after.
Brilliant. Hilarious that he signed thousands of footballers on extremely expensive deals.
There's two ways of looking at this. One is like the Villa fan, and we laugh and it's all good fun. But from the from a football supporter's point of view, it's like it's a bit very like that Palace situation. This is three games after a window where he signed shitloads of players.
This is modern football. It was crazy, isn't it?
You know, last 48 hours, he signed a whole bunch of players, and obviously he's going to take a few games to, you know, even start to bed them down. And you know, he's got I was going to call him a talisman figure, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. I think he's not a nobody. The Blues are going to have to come to the realization sooner rather than later that they dropped a major clanger, given what Gary Rowett was doing there.
Yeah.
Getting rid. You know, he did with well, no resource. And, I mean, he was even operating under a transfer embargo for a bit, wasn't he, Rowett? You wonder what...
But going back to Redknapp, I mean, I don't follow the Blues' fortune or, you know, what's happening in terms of social media with their fans, but... I mean, I realise they got beat 6 times already this season, but there wasn't a real groundswell of Redknapp out or anything, was there? Let's put it this way. I think there was more Bruce out activity than there has been Redknapp out activity.
But you'd have to think that the average Blues fan, though, I mean, they're not going to be happy with where they're at, but there's going to be that, you know, that mature football fan thing of, like you say, that he's only barely into the season, and after, you know, the transfer window closes, what, 3 or 4 games into the season? 3 games into the season?
Yeah, and I think they were pretty excited about what they'd bought. Hotta Yotta, who was Brentford's better remaining players.
Yeah, he was the creative spark last term.
Yeah, they bought 3 of their main hitters. They were hopeful, and it's an odd one.
Well, we'll never know, but the guy, in fairness, was not given any opportunity to demonstrate. Bizarre. Absolutely bizarre.
But we're not working on the logic of Redknapp sympathy. We're just, if he was any manager, really, it seems an odd one.
It stinks of modern football and no time, doesn't it?
We've already discussed the Bruce situation with all certain Villa fans putting pressure, almost going on this game-by-game ultimatum. Win or be sacked, when you've got to look at it in a, you know, blocks of 10, 11 at least, and especially after he's brought in X amount of players. I mean, whether you like Bruce or not, it's a weird position that we're both in. Here we are kind of defending Bruce's position, but not as Bruce the name or what he can do, but just if he was any manager, you've got to give him like 10, 11 games after a summer transfer window to start to think about if they're going to do it.
Well, no, we sort of had this chat in the last pod as well, and I think on our site separately, that this is about having the middle ground and just having a rational grown-up discussion, parking that I don't like Bruce, I love Bruce. You know, it's not about that. It's just about what, you know, it could be any frigging manager, because we have had every combination over the last 10 years.
What is our best chance of promotion? At the moment, it's the manager who's just got in those summer players. Whether or not last season was probably the most horrendous pile of poo I've had to watch. Speaking of poo,
we've served some up
at the latest midweek. Well, I don't know if you're allowed to call it League Cup anymore. I mean, I said on Twitter that if they kept calling it the League Cup, maybe that would have sustained the interest amongst supporters a little longer than calling it all these silly names. And the latest one, I refuse to say it. So
I'm not even sure what it is. Is it an
energy drink? They were so desperate for people to go to this game in terms of ticket sales that, you know, you saw Greg Evans of the Birmingham Fail retweeting an Aston Villa Twitter ad for tickets, saying AVFC on a decent run, will it continue tonight? Basically trying to tempt you to go and see it. And it's like, hang on a minute, why have the Birmingham Mail, have they had a word from somebody to help try to push the tickets?
Because it's like they knew the attendance was going to be low.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Negatron alert. 11,000 at the Middlesbrough game. Close the Holt End for the next home game. Close the Holt End for the next home game.
It looked way less than 11,000. Mm-hmm. But, 11,000 is pretty shocking stuff.
Pretty shocking whether you've sold the tickets or not. I mean, interestingly, when I was having a little mooch on the website late afternoon to try and buy some tickets, the only tickets that were coming
game?
Were hospitality tickets on the mobile version of the site anyway. But the other interesting thing is that we had 14,000 there for the friendly in 2016 against Middlesbrough. I'm laughing because I think that's funny, but it is sort of depressing as well. It shows you how the Carabao Cup has just become a bit of a farce, really.
I mean, it's not just exclusive to the League Cup. The league attendances haven't actually set the world on fire either.
No, they haven't. No.
How do you get them back? Start winning regularly, but also play decent football, or some form of football, shall we? Just let's take baby steps.
Perhaps have more than one shot on target as well over 90 minutes.
Yeah, that was. You looked at that team. Mm-hmm. Sorry, we're talking against Middlesbrough. Middlesbrough won 2-0. You looked at that team and you thought that should do a job, because pretty much Middlesbrough are also playing, let's say, a reserve team.
Mm-hmm. Plus Patrick Bamford.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Come on, we've got like Scott Hogan, £10 million. I mean, at one stage after Lansbury's injury, we have two strikers playing together who we've paid over £10 million each. I mean, there's not many teams in the Premier League that have got two reserve strikers of £10 million plus on their books. And one shot. So we have one shot, which is exactly what we achieved against Brentford. Twice in three games, regardless of the personnel, is kind of a reflection on the overall ethos, and it's not too exciting. So if you didn't go to Villa Park for the cup game, I completely understand why.
It's a bit of a puzzle when, you know, I think we're missing a trick here. We could have built a bit of momentum, a bit more of a positive vibe. But then you sort of strip away our best players, inverted commas, and we don't have a lot of craft, or it sort of reverts to type, doesn't it? All the issues that, you know, they become more glaring.
We obviously played Colchester, Wigan, which are, Middlesbrough. I mean, Wigan rested players as well, so
they changed
Middlesbrough.
Their 11,
yeah, Middlesbrough are obviously a step above them. But I mean, when I saw the team sheet, the thing that we did have, Domar played against Wigan, and that's what I thought about this team. We had no real quality on the wing.
Yeah,
and
correct.
From that point of view, I thought, we might struggle here. So I think if I was managing this game, yes, I would have played the young guys and everything, but I would have added a bit more quality on the wing there, because you can play two strikers worth almost 25 million, but if there's no real service, or you've taken off one of the potential outlets of service, then you're going to struggle.
Looking back now, this was a bit of a buy, wasn't it, for Middlesbrough? I think that we'd absolutely... I don't think they were particularly interested either, but...
And I don't think Bruce was. Which,
I don't think he was interested at all, and I have to say that I'm a defender of Bruce in the sense of give him time, but I do think he's missed a... This is an easy mark against him, I think, that you could build a little bit of a cup run on... on the side here, and you don't, you know, you wouldn't even have to progress too far in the competition to come up against some more interesting opposition.
I mean, his main Spurs
was the obvious example we gave, that you could draw them, and you've got a Wembley trip. You know, look at Barnsley; they took 3,000.
Yeah, you've got a day out for your fans.
You know, we could fill the 3,000 allocation almost four times over.
Midweek Wembley, I think we'd take 6,000 at least.
I think, well, if Barnsley took three, you know, I think you can factor that up.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that hard to get back from Wembley. Well, we're talking about a game that's never going to happen, but I mean, Bruce is
but
quite...
what about that Champions League final we're going to have?
Well, yeah.
In just two years' time.
But after the game, Bruce said, we know what the most important thing is for us. We have to mount a challenger in this division. We've got a huge week coming up. I mean, it's like a cop-out, isn't it? But it also shows that he wasn't that bothered. But, you know, there's 11,000 people that are bothered. And those are the guys that suffer in the end with these weakened teams. But as I said, no real problem with a weakened team. But if you want to win it, make sure you win it by slipping in a couple of little extras. You know, a Domar on a wing.
I think you could have made the Middlesbrough game a bit more interesting by having a bit more of a go. You know, I think you can carry some form of momentum forward. And I have to say, I think Middlesbrough probably arrived in similar sort of fashion to us. That, you know, if they'd have gone behind, would they have really been that arse to get two goals?
Exactly.
You know.
You've got two teams in exactly the same position who have the same excuses already up their sleeve, and we're at home. So you look at it, if you get a home tie against a team in your division, you just play the team to win that game, and that would have been probably just supplementing what we had. I mean, Codger could do, he should have been on the bench, give him an extra 20 minutes, half an hour to get back to fitness.
Well, speaking of fitness, I think it's interesting the two injury concerns that we picked up in the game of, well, actually two players who you would think, or who are in and around the squad in Lansbury, and Hogan's got another injury now, I notice as well.
He
got withdrawn. It's an ankle injury, so I mean, he's becoming a bit of a, dare I say, sick note. It's not,
I think we've already called him that.
He is. He is. It's all a bit fuzzy, isn't it, around the edges with these sorts of games? But it, you know, I can see why we'd want to protect certain players. But then the two players who of that 11 who you probably think, well, we wouldn't want to get any injuries or whatnot. Well, they've got them. So
I think the first goal wins that game, essentially.
Well, exactly. That's what I mean. I think if either team that gets in front, you know, granted Villa lost Elphick to the sending off, but as soon as they scored, we were never going to come back. And I think they
it was a penalty, wasn't it? So it was all related.
But that's the point, isn't it? That I think that we, you know, whichever team scored first, the other was never going to have the appetite or the interest to score two.
So the momentum now has to come from our last league performance, which
Barnsley.
I felt we were going to win this just for the reasons at the top of the show that we said. But you never know with Villa, and they seem to find any excuse not to perform away. But he set the team out 4-4-2, the first time for a long time that he's played what he's often said is his preferred lineup, and also preferred strike force, i.e. two up top. But you looked at that team and you thought, when he tried 4-4-2 before and it didn't work for him, he alluded that he didn't have the personnel to do it. But when you looked at that team sheet, 4-4-2, you looked at that midfield, Whelan, you know, it could be Jedinek or Whelan, doesn't matter. But Snodgrass, Domar on the other side, Hourihane in the middle. I mean, look at that. You've got goals and assists written all over it. And Snodgrass is a bit more tenacious, so that gives you a bit more...
Yeah.
Even though he's wide man, it gives you a bit more bite in that midfield, so he makes up for not having that fifth man.
I think as well, it has to unsettle the opposition as well, because you've got a couple of names in there. You've got... I thought Snodgrass was a... It's interesting now, we're starting to see him and he's getting a bit of match sharpness as well, that he obviously plays on his wrong foot on the right-hand side because he's left-footed, as we've mentioned before. That's a nice trick, and there was an interesting effort he made in the first half where I thought, I see what you're doing here, because it does drag the opposition's left-back and left-centre-half all over the place, actually.
It was Ashley Young's trick on the other wing.
Yeah, quite right, actually.
So obvious what he was going to do, but a lot of defenders obviously didn't watch his previous games or tapes of him, because he would just cut in and then cut on his right foot and just bend it in the far corner.
Pretty much
every time.
Very effective, and I think it unnerves people, because I think the assumption is that someone will go down the line. You know, with a Domi, you know, generally speaking, he's going down the line. I suppose Snodgrass is the opposite, isn't he? That I'd be pretty confident now that he cuts in, and what it does is it's something that we spoke about perhaps last season, where it opens the game up, doesn't it? Where you suddenly find space, you know, where, you know, balls can be fed through, and you know, it's
great. But when he cuts in, if the defence start to guess this, it basically opens up the wing for
an overlap.
Elmo, and that's why Elmo's playing right back, to basically fill in. So that opens up that. So it kind of works. It presents a dual threat.
I think it's really good. And the way I've been reflecting on the Barnsley game was that there was obviously a group of fans who had pitched this as a, you know, the pre-game build-up. And there was some, in some quarters, people were almost willing us to lose the game so that they could see this sacking or this fulfilment of the anti-Bruce agenda to come to some sort of fruition.
Negatron alert!
Mass hysteria outbreak! Hashtag Bruce out, bots attack on social media! The Villa engine is trolling! The Villa engine is trolling!
What we actually saw was Villa play quite doggedly at times, I thought, and I thought that was personified through Terry. You know, I thought Davis had a really strong performance as well. You know, it wasn't always pretty, but we soaked up some pressure and we hurt them when we needed to as well.
Because we let them have the ball and let them come to us. Yeah. I think they had almost 70% of possession overall. But I thought Terry and Chester were actually back on point. I mean, they've been a bit kind of ropey and at the start of the season. I don't know if that's just his fellow defenders getting to know John Terry. But I thought it was the best game Terry's had so far.
I thought it was the best game he had by a distance, and
in his career.
yeah. Well, definitely. Yeah. I mean, uncontested performance. People will look back on Mokeswell with fond memories. But there were three or four times where he was just in the right place at the right time, wasn't he? That experience of just stepping in or reading the game.
Yeah, essentially the game was decided in the first half by the defences. Villa's was pretty much dealt with anything and snuffed out any threat quite early doors, while Barnsley essentially made two cock-ups, which cost them the whole game.
Well, it was very un-Villa-like to actually punish a team for making a mistake as well, and that's got to be welcomed. We need a bit of luck as well, because we haven't had much of that. But we took our chances.
Yeah, the first cock-up was obviously the goalkeeper just not making the ball his, which he should have done. But the second one, I mean, the penalty, he touched the ball. He got the ball.
Mm.
But he also kind of took the man like a it was like a split second after. Yeah. And you saw Davis, Davis potentially could have jumped over him and carried on. But, you know, why do that? You might as well take the penalty.
Let the referee make the decision.
Exactly, yeah. Let's say he would have been a very honest young man if he had hurdled the player and carried on, and probably a stupid honest young man at
We'd
the
have all gone,
time.
Why the bloody hell didn't you throw yourself on the floor, you...
Exactly. Dive, you bastard, dive! But it was, you know, it's one of those, it's a, you know, penalty, there's no arguments. But what did you make of Codger's return? He started, I think it was proclaimed before the game that he'd only be playing 60-odd minutes.
Yeah, he's the bit, isn't it, where you can see where we've missed that fantastic close control. And something I'd forgotten about him, actually. He winds up opposition defences and opposition fans. Something rotten, because there is a bit of physical, there is a bit of pushing.
He's a troublemaker, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because he's got a character, hasn't he? But I was reflecting on it again after the game, thinking, actually, he's one of those strikers that you can imagine, if he's in the opposition team, you think, oh, loathe that man. And I'm delighted that he's back, because I do think that where he's around, goals will come, and I think he'll either score them selfishly, or I have to say that this unexpected partnership with Davis sort of opens the debate around Scott Hogan, doesn't it, really? And it puts a bit of the ball...
Not really. I think it closes the debate.
Well, yeah. I see where you're coming from, and I think that... I think we weren't convinced last season when we were trying to forge... when Bruce was trying to forge some sort of strike partnership, that Hogan and Codger looked the most unnatural pairing, didn't they?
Yeah, it just doesn't work. I don't think.
Still does, I guess. Davis is the unknown quantity, isn't he, for defences?
Davis, ironically, he's the only one we haven't spent over 10 million on, and he's actually probably the most all-round striker we've got. And the good news is he started to score.
Started to score, looks a threat, is incredibly strong, and...
Has great feet.
Yeah, absolutely.
And opens the game up for... he'll, as you will see in future games, as I predict, he will open the game up for Codger and give him chances, as well as what he's been doing with getting the attacking midfielders involved more.
Which is the point I was going to make. I can see that being a very interesting partnership, because I think that they could feed off one another quite well. I think having that Codger dimension as well, it gives teams something to think about all of the
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The big plus, and it's been a potential issue highlighted all the way through the transfer window, was the apparent weakness in the Villa squad was this kind of left-hand side where if Green gets injured, which he did, suddenly we're kind of looking around to see who could fill in. Bjarnason has been given a go. I don't know if that's just in obviously the cup games and that was why he was there, or whether it was with a view that he could be the answer in that position. But obviously we've got some out and out wingers, but they're all on the right hand side. But while we're now in a position where we have a right sided midfielder who's predominantly left footed, and then we have a Domar on the left who's predominantly right footed. But it seems when you just look at that, the lineup, we've got good players now in each position, and Adomar contributes and made a big contribution in this game, obviously by scoring two his assists last season. He's got cutting edge. He's not a passenger. He contributes.
No. Well, I think that's you can never accuse Adomar of not trying to contribute either. He's not a player who you think bloody hell he's been a lazy get. I think he frustrates people, and particularly across the back end of last season when we were so desperately trying to push up the league that his inconsistency was probably quite polarised because we were struggling so much up front and we were conceding silly goals that so much fell on him. But his assists speaks for itself. His ability to get forward and create something. And it's relentless, isn't it? It might not always come off, but time and time again, he will deliver the ball into a dangerous area. And it's been a long time since we've had a midfielder, and this is something that Green doesn't yet possess the ability to do, is to consistently, you know, when you beat your man, he puts the ball in. There's no fuss with Adomar, is there really? Yeah. There's none of this cutting back. There's none of this trying to beat the man again. None of this bollocks. It's direct.
Yeah, we made a lot of about Green having not quite the final touch at the moment, but Adomar does. So I think Adomar is an upgrade on Green. And also, I was especially impressed by he's actually tracking back to help Taylor. He's sometimes accused of... let's say being a bit lazy getting back to support, but this is normally on the right hand side, but he seemed to kind of really relish getting stuck in and helping out in the defensive part of his game. So when I saw that, and then I saw Snodgrass tenacity in the middle of the park as well, coming in obviously from the right hand side and getting stuck in and showing, you know, huge responsibility, I thought, well, Snodgrass hasn't done anything to capture the headlines yet, but what he has done, he's shown this kind of willingness to battle, which is something that Villa players have been lacking over the last few seasons. And so I just thought, actually, this team is the first time it's ever played, and it's the first time this formation, you know, with these players has been played. And it's only going to get better because you've got Snodgrass rusty at the moment, so he's kind of finding his way back. You've got Codger coming back from a long-term injury. You've got Adomar, who's now perhaps going to have a regular place, and he's going to have a focus that he actually knows he's playing, and he's not kind of in and out. Same with Hurahan. He's probably going to get a bit more confidence that he's a member of the main first 11. And I think for the first time since he's been manager, Bruce has potentially found his proper first 11.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And the distinction I'd make between Barnsley, and it's an interesting comparison after the most recent game against Middlesbrough, is the Barnsley game where you looked at the squad and you looked at the team, you thought, crikey, this is the first time we've really broken free from a group of players who've completely let the club down. You know, there's no bleeding into the squad of failure or people or players who are scarred or lack confidence or who have that bad experience in them where they revert to type as soon as a ball goes into our net. You know, you wind forward a bit to the Middlesbrough game, and what you see is a number of fringe players and players who have consistently let us down and just frankly aren't good enough.
Yeah.
You know, and you see all the same old problems rear their head. Against Barnsley, like you say, that we're starting to see the formation of, you know, a spine of a team, and a number of players across it, you think, well, they've got to start. You know, we're starting to have the Adoma Green debate, you know, who can provide more assists. You know, the fact that we can actually field two strikers who complement one another, two centre-halves who you've got experience and massive potential in a player like Chester. And I have to say, the goalkeeper, Johnston, has come on so much in a year that...
Yeah.
Stands out as a Bruce will not get much credit for this actually, but stands out as a fantastic piece of business actually.
I always remember growing up supporting Villa, one thing you're looking at with a goalkeeper is you just feel completely confident.
Yes.
That he's in between the sticks.
Yep.
So there's always a chance that, you know, you can pull off miracles and earn your points. And I felt that with Spinks, I felt that with Bosnick.
Mm-hmm.
After a while, maybe Friedel.
Friedel was steady, wasn't he?
Yeah, but still felt confident that you had a solid keeper.
Yeah,
but then looking around, I mean, Sorensen, not totally convinced.
Prone to
there.
A clanger, yeah.
Prone to a clanger. Guzan, he deteriorated. Initially, he wasn't that great as a backup keeper. I mean, that Blackburn semi-final, the 6-4 one, that should have been 6-1 or 6-2. He really let himself down, and then he thought, well, he's not going to. But then he made this miraculous recovery, and but then
he only had one good season.
That lasted a season, then he was gone. But Johnston, for this league, based on the season so far, I think. I mean, even against Barnsley, but he didn't have that much to do. Everything he went up for, or he just looked solid. He looked comfortable now.
Yeah, he's a big lad, and the thing about it is you wonder whether it's easy to lump a lot of pressure on these players. And last season, he's still a lone player, ultimately. He's got something to prove, and you think, well, last season, again, playing in a struggling team, you know, still a youth player, really, with not vast amount of experience at Villa. He has the opportunity to make it his own, doesn't he, really? And there probably will be a decision in the not-too-distant future for Villa and for Johnston around making it permanent, if you like. And I suppose it is that thing, isn't it, that we don't want to get carried away, but we've been a club that, in my view, we haven't had a good goalkeeper since Friedel. You know, realistically, that Guzan had one season, but after that, I can't say I've had any great confidence in him between the sticks. And
yeah, I think confidence is over Johnston. When you look at that team that started against Barnsley, when you're trying to nail down a first 11, the only debate is the defensive midfield position and Whelan versus Jedinak.
Mm.
And I think Whelan's a lot more mobile than Jedinak, and Jedinak, unless Bruce frees him up a little bit, I'm not a big fan of him playing on the toes of the two centre-backs, because I just think that's a waste of a player.
Well, he practically becomes a centre-half, doesn't he? And as the game wears on, he gets deeper and deeper and deeper, which is what he does for Australia, really, that he starts as a centre-mid and they sort of try and get their goal and shut up shop. Whelan's... Yeah. I'd have to assume, given Whelan's age and the fee we got him for and what I've seen so far, I do think Whelan's a decent footballer, and I've said before that I think that people can make broad brush assumptions about players, and you know, I've seen enough of him playing for Ireland to know that, you know, I haven't seen much of him at Stoke, but enough of him with Ireland to know that he's going to be or should be a functional footballer for us.
Well, he breaks up play, that's his main objective.
Breaks up play, I mean, you know, people get this... These tags, like I think some of the Stoke fans refer to him as the crab, and you know,
that was me.
That was you. but you know, we are where we are, and I think that we needed last season when Jedinak wasn't available, we had Sweet FA that was the logical swap in. This season, we have Whelan, he can swap in, it can be rotated. You know, Jedinak's got that ridiculous international schedule still that he has to upkeep of, you know, the Oceania, Australasia. Fixtures that are just, I mean, the fixtures aren't so bad, but it's the travelling is just bonkers, and it would, you know, you're talking a 2-week swing really for him.
Yeah, and that's why you need that secondary player. So
you do.
We have 10 players pretty much nailed down now, I think.
Yeah, I'd say so.
And that other position can be shared, no problem. And then obviously you just rotate with anybody else when needed.
And it was a chat I was having with someone the other day that you wind the clock back a year, so you with Di Matteo, and you think of that squad with your Gallinis, your Richards still, your McCormacks, and this sort of, you look at the 11. I mean, I'm very guilty of, I'll always look back at the squad from the last time we played a team. Yeah. And it's remarkable, even in a year, the change. You know, I'm not going to say that I think we should have performed better than we did last season. You know, that's nothing new for people who listen to this podcast or read our respective sites, probably. But here and now, I think we're a far more... You can see there's a lot more discipline in the team. There's been enough change, and I think that our January business has allowed us to bed in a lot of players. I think Hourihan looks like a different footballer straight away.
Yeah.
And is starting as well to grind out a bit of form, which is very positive. And now you can start to say and do things like, right, you know, players like Snodgrass become available on a loan. You can pick them in and they complement what you've got, and that's really good. And also having problems, inverted commas, problems like, well, you know, swapping in Green and Adoma. And I know that obviously Green's got a bit of a long-termer, but, you know, there's worse problems to have, isn't there?
Yeah, well, Grealish is meant to be on his way back.
Yes.
So
yes.
Not that improves the first 11, because I think he's going to struggle to get in the team. The only way he gets in now is by playing really well and impressing us.
Correct. And I think people, the difference between probably when Grealish was, you know, again, winding that clock back a year, we didn't have set roles necessarily for the team. And I think if we've got plan A and plan B and a couple of formations, that Grealish is going to have to adapt to that, I think. You know, I don't think that, you know, we've tried.
He's got to raise his game. He's got to raise his game, and he's got to. He can't Absolutely. Survive on hype now. It's not about potential. It's about what he can deliver.
Grealish is, I mean, desperately unlucky with the injury that he got. But in equal measure, he's actually in desperate need of a big season, because he either needs to establish himself at this level, you know, in order to propel us or be a part of a team that propels us back to the Premier League. Or what's the future for him? Because if he's not part of a Villa team that is on an upward trajectory out of the Championship, what is his role here?
Yeah, well, we're going to find out. But now we have what resembles, finally under Bruce, a first 11. And we'll see how that gets on against teams. Well, we've got a Forest game. You've got to go for 3 points there. And then we've got, let's say we're playing two of the underperforming teams in Burton and Bolton. Until next time, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from him.
Dave, this conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
My old man said...
Hello. I'm David.
What can you do, David?
I can do almost anything that could possibly be asked of me. I can assist your employees. I can make your organization more efficient. I can carry out directives that my human counterparts might find distressing or unethical.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.